Good morning. Let's start with a meditation. The longer I am on this path, the more I see I do not need words. I do not need thoughts. I need the conscious awareness of the presence of the living God. And that I have. And that I am. The living presence of God. And now listen. Most of you know we are studying, looking at A Parenthesis in Eternity by Joel Goldsmith. And in conjunction with, together with, the Book of John and sometimes other books. But we are coming to the third and final part of this book of Joel's, part three, living in the circle. Circle would be the circle of Christhood. So let's just hop in. You've had some silence, I hope. You have the listening ear, you're receptive. Let the spirit within you teach you. Everyone who comes to this recording today will come away with something else that they learn different than the other people. So everyone will have a unique teaching. But remember, they shall all be taught of God. So you'll be taught from within, not by words nor by thoughts, but from within. Living in, through, and by the Spirit. To believe that life is subject to or dependent on anything or any thought is material sense. In this chapter, and indeed in this book, he's harping on the idea that we should not, well, elsewhere he calls it ignorance, to believe that we need something out here, whether it's a relationship. Hold on a minute, I'll have to get that. So he is harping on the idea that we don't need anything out here. We need what we started with, the Father within, the living presence of God. It's not relationships, it's not pills or plasters, it's not jobs, it's not even money. Busy today, sorry. Okay, do you remember Joel saying that you have to go around almost with a walkie-talkie? All right, so to believe that life is subject to or dependent on anything or any thought is material sense. All the years we've spent studying truth, by now we could pass any written test that there is. But those thoughts I posted the other day, I think it was yesterday, conscious thought is not consciousness. And that is a, that's a wowzer if you get it. Pardon me. Because conscious thought about these truths, and we do a lot of it. That's how we start our meditations. Conscious thought is not consciousness. And so if you're thinking about somebody calls like that and asks you for help, and you say, yes, I'll help you, and you hang up the phone, and now you're grasping, you're looking for the truth to meet the situation. And that's conscious thought. And that won't heal anybody, and it won't uplift anybody. You really need to stop that. It's time to go beyond that. And that was his purpose for the Kailua Study Series and many of his books. What then are we supposed to do? We're supposed to do what he's been telling us for 50 years, 60 years. We're supposed to stop. Father, and listen. And then we're not dependent on thoughts. Then we're waiting upon the Lord. We're waiting upon that movement, that fizz, as Joe calls it. We're waiting on the still small voice. And it's not conscious thought. So when consciousness speaks, the error melts. It's like getting up in the middle of the night. You're stumbling in the darkness until you hit the light switch. And then, of course, it's all lit up. Where did the darkness go? Who knows? Who even cares? I can see. And so in our meditation, when it's conscious thought, we need to say, okay, that's enough of that. I've had years of that, and it's not working. So now I'm either going to find out what Joel meant, or I'm going to die trying. And maybe that'll be a good thing if I die and to self and God reveals itself. So I'm going to listen. I'm going to turn within and listen and wait for the living God. See, the letter, conscious thought, kills. The living God gives life. So I have to listen, and I have to learn to listen. And so now someone calls for help, and I do what Joel says. I say, yes, I'll give you some help. And I hang up the phone, and then I get in here as fast as I can, and I don't make an affirmation, and I don't make a denial. And he says, if it's necessary, grit the teeth and just listen. And he says, it'll happen. Your consciousness will respond, will lift up itself. Okay, so we're not dependent on thoughts anymore. That's material sense. The truth is that life governs the external realm. That's consciousness. But to come into agreement with that, we must understand that our body and our mind belong to us, and that it is I that governs that mind and that body, not the mind and the body that governs us. You see? He's going to harp on that until some of us say, I'm going to try it. And try it we will. Try it we will. Okay. Turn the page. Even when we come to a place where we are convinced of this truth, this is not yet illumination. Okay, let's read the truth. I am the embodiment of all that God is. Because of my oneness with my source, all that is true of the source is true of me, for I and my source are one. So even when we come to a place where we are convinced of this, this is not yet illumination. No, because you're convinced in your thought. Let's just lay it right out there. Hang on, I'm going to get something. Okay, I pulled up the principle I want here. It's in The Art of Spiritual Healing. And he talks about getting back inside yourself and not rehearsing any words or thoughts. He says, you have to be a beholder of consciousness. And he says, as you carry this out in practice, watching the stone being formed in and of your consciousness, while you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder, eventually a state of peace will come. See, this is happening within you without an affirmation or a denial. Just you waiting in silence. Listening. Listening, listening. He calls it going within and opening those inner ears. Then you will catch a glimpse of God as is. Not a power over anything, just God is. You begin to understand that no power does anything to anyone, and you become a beholder as reality begins to appear. See? You're listening. Reality begins to appear. All problems fade out in proportion as you develop this ability to be quiet, to behold, and to witness divine harmony unfold. And because of the principle of oneness, your patient experiences this harmony. All right. Here's the part that I wanted you to hear. The principle behind this process is that inasmuch as the activity of the human mind, are you listening? As much as the activity of the human mind is the substance and the activity of hypnotism, when the human mind is not functioning, there is no more hypnotism. When you are not thinking thoughts or words, when you are in a stillness, the human mind is stopped. The hypnotism is gone. When you experience this, you will feel something which transcends the human dimension of life. I love that. That's in the chapter, What Did Hinder You? So tying that back into a parenthesis in eternity, even when we come to a place where we are convinced of this truth, this is not yet illumination. Illumination is that step he talks about after that, where you don't have words and thoughts, where you don't have hypnotism, and you're listening, and you awaken to the living presence of God. Illumination does not take place merely by reading words and agreeing that they are beautiful and hoping that they are true. And we've done that for so many years. Illumination is that moment of realization when we know that whereas before we were blind, now we see. In other words, we've had many, many meditations in which we've repeated words and thoughts, made affirmations and denials, and that was okay at the first degree and some in the second degree. But in the second degree, and definitely in the third degree, we have to unlearn all of that and take a step. And Joel says in the Kailua Study Series, it's a big step we're going to take now. And he says, we abandon, we throw away the words and the thoughts. Just for a season, not forever. Because it's not the words and thoughts we think. That's hypnotism. But wait, I'm thinking about truth. Yes, you're thinking about truth according to the human mind. That's still hypnotism. So we learn to abandon that. I remember one talk he gave, and he said, abandon hope, all ye that enter in. I got a little gnat flying around. And he said, see, I'm in the woods. And you know, when you're in the woods, he said, just like the pirates, abandon hope, all ye that enter in. Hope in what? Hope in these words and these thoughts. And so we take the step, the big step. And he said, it's a hard one. You may have a battle with me. You may have a battle with the infinite way, but you have to go through it in order to reach that place of conscious awareness of the living God. So, illumination is the attainment of that fourth dimensional consciousness. If you're looking into the invisible, as Madeline said, you're looking into the fourth dimensional consciousness. You have it. If you're looking into the material sense, which includes words and thoughts, then you're looking at the third dimension. Even when it's colored in words of truth, it's not illumination. You must know that you must go farther. Deeper is a better word. Illumination is the attainment of that fourth dimensional consciousness in which we no longer see materially. We no longer hear materially or believe materially, but in which we see through the appearance, just as we would see through the appearance of a mirage on the desert. Now, he tells us in the New Horizon, he tells us that everything we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, and think is material sense. And we know, we read it all the time in his books, we hear it in the talks, we must die to material sense and awaken to a spiritual sense of existence, knowing that, well, beholding consciousness living itself. That's one of the wisdoms. Consciousness lives itself. You don't live it. The human mind, which is hypnotism, wants to copy all this, wants to convince you that by repeating formulas, affirmations, and denials that you've got it, and you don't have it. You're not supposed to have it. It's supposed to have you. Okay, so the human being living in the third dimension sees an ailing body or disturbed mind and longs to do something about it, especially if it's someone you love. Whereas the fourth dimensional consciousness sees through it. Now, we hinted at that a day or two ago, or maybe it was last week, when we said that we must learn to see into the invisible. And that's just not poetic talk. It's a real experience, and it must take place at first in our meditations, and then with eyes open. <laughs> This does not mean that this higher consciousness has no awareness of the existence of such things. This is where it gets interesting. But to the fourth dimensional consciousness, they do not have existence as reality. That is the difference. Even Jesus Christ saw the crippled man. But while his physical eye took cognizance of this condition, his inner eye saw through the appearance into the invisible to that man's Christhood. Okay, so over here he says the reality is consciousness. If through our consciousness we manifest a certain amount of supply or abundance, and if for some reason it is wiped away, what difference does that make if we still have the consciousness that brought it forth? I had an orange tree one time. It was growing in my backyard where I was living over near the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. And we had a big English garden behind the house, maybe a half an acre altogether. And over on the right was an orange tree. And I hadn't noticed it before. And I walked over and there was three oranges on the tree. Three. And I picked one and ate it. Oh, it was delicious, sweet. I think it was either seedless or hardly any seeds. It was very nice. And so I stood in front of that tree and I said, thank you. That was wonderful. And do you know, I never put any fertilizer on it. I never did anything. The following year, there was 36 oranges just from saying thank you and recognizing, of course, the invisible. So, if those oranges, 36 oranges, had fallen off and been smashed and the birds ate them and whatnot, the next year there would have been more. That's what he's saying. When you have the consciousness, it's like having the tree. It will continue to produce its image and likeness. See, it's not the principles that you apply. I know we've been taught that. I know we've been thinking that for a long time. We've reached a stage now, which is the third degree, in which it's not us. It's not the individual person. It's not my thoughts. It's not my words. It's not what I practice. Oh, no. Now I am dying to all of that. I'm stepping aside. Father, you are the way. You are the truth. You are the life. And since I and my Father are one, I, my consciousness, am the way. And so now all I have to do is be still and stand a little to one side and behold consciousness living itself. And I do that like this. Father, and I feel that stirring within tells me God, consciousness is on the scene. Oh, by the way, if you hear any pounding in the background, it's the squirrels. They love to hop up into the black walnut tree and knock them down, and they land on the roof and roll down to the grass where they can break them open and eat them. Okay. It is the nature of our consciousness to produce and reproduce itself, to multiply, so that regardless of what may be taken away, the consciousness of it remains. and tomorrow it will begin producing again. This is why I know 100% that consciousness is my supply. And I have proved it in many different fields. I have proved that the job is not my supply, not my supply at all. My supply, my consciousness, is the job. And there's a difference. See, it's not depending on an external, it's from within out. Consciousness forming itself. And this is also true of my wife and my friends, all of you. This is consciousness appearing as companionship. And I know it. I know it. I will never be without it. And what I'm working on now is knowing that consciousness is my life. Because you see, when I died a year and a half ago, there were no words or thoughts. The human being, the hypnotism was gone. And so consciousness began living itself and brought me right out of that back to where I'm all here. The doctor made his educated pronouncement. He said to my wife, I don't know how much of him will come back, if any. He said, he's not a good candidate for machines. So that's pretty much not a good sentence. And she ignored him and went and called John and they prayed. And I woke up and all of me came back. And that was not conscious thought. I guarantee you that was consciousness. And so now I know the third leg, which is that consciousness forms itself as my life, my body, my form. And should this one be wiped out, it'll form another one. So my consciousness is supply, infinite supply. And now, talking about my consciousness, how many are there? There's only one God consciousness, so it's your consciousness too. And so consciousness is infinite supply. I will never be without it. Consciousness is omnipresent companionship, omnipresent comforter. I will never be without it. Consciousness is everlasting life, always taking form. I will never be without it. So I don't know how I got into all that, but whatever consciousness contains, consciousness can bring forth. Inasmuch as God is our consciousness therefore contains infinity. So the measure of our bringing forth the fruits of consciousness must be infinite. It requires illumination to be able to realize that. What? That consciousness is infinite. So it requires illumination to be able to realize that. And until the illumination comes, we will continue to judge by appearances and thereby hold ourselves in limitation. So you read something like that and it says, it requires illumination to be able to realize that consciousness manifests infinitely. And then you ask yourself, what's illumination? And you go back here where he told us. He told us that illumination is the attainment of the fourth dimensional consciousness where we're able to look into the invisible. If you're not looking into the invisible, you don't yet have it. You want to have it, you believe it, but you don't yet have it. And so it requires more practice of what? Meditation. It's in meditation that we learn to listen, to be receptive, to be beholders, and to bear witness. Then, and only then, do we look into the invisible. And then when consciousness announces itself, He says we'll feel something that transcends this world. And we do, we really do. When the fourth dimensional consciousness is attained, even in a measure, life begins to flow more by grace than by effort. And remember, the illumined walk without fear by grace. And the illumined are you when you learn to do this. Things come more easily and more abundantly than ever before, because with illumination comes the realization that the I of us individualizes as our consciousness into visible expression, embraces infinity, and good flows forth from our consciousness into visible expression. The more we abide in the truth, I have meat to eat that you know not of, the more we bring infinity into expression. Now, he is constantly saying throughout all his writings that a consciousness imbued with truth is a law unto our existence. But that does not mean a consciousness where you repeat 300 times a day, I have meat to eat that you know not of, even silently. Because that's words and thoughts, and that's not illumination, and it's not looking into the invisible. This is not supposed to be easy. We have spent countless lifetimes dwelling on the third dimension, living in words and thoughts. And now we're dying to all of that and learning to focus our attention on the invisible and watching it manifest. And even when we're enjoying a good meal, Joel says, we still look into the invisible and are grateful for that invisible presence which is appearing as this good meal. See, we are training ourselves to look into the invisible wherever we are. This is true in healing work. It's also true in, I worked in a factory one time. I've told this story before, but it's the honest to God truth. I was working on digital magnetic tape recorders. Those are the reel-to-reel tapes that you use in together with computers, and they store data for big corporations. And we were building them. And I had to solder some of the components. And I would solder the components, build the whole thing up mechanically, solder those wires, give it to the inspector, and she would kick it back. Because my soldering looked horrible. My soldering was horrible. The two wires had a big glop on it, you know? And I couldn't get it. I was fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And then I remembered God. So I excused myself. I went into the bathroom of this huge plant, huge factory, sat down and had a meditation in which I realized the presence of God. I didn't ask for anything. I didn't use words or thoughts. I just had that. He said, you'll feel something which transcends this world. And I did. As I am this very second. Hello, beautiful. And I got up. There's nothing like feeling that presence. Nothing at all. I got up. I went back to the floor. I grabbed some units. Grabbed a roll of solder, grabbed the soldering iron, and I took the two together, and I just touched them. And the solder flowed on. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. I got it. I did them all. It was fun. I started liking it. And the inspector got them, and guess what? Every single one of them passed. And I never had that problem soldering again. Oh, it's so wonderful. So my point is that wherever you find yourself, whether you're a spiritual healer and you need to stand aside and watch that presence work, or whether you're soldering two wires and you need to stand aside and watch that presence work. If you're looking into the invisible for your source, it's going to work. It's going to work. All right. Illumination brings freedom from dependence on persons and things. And the only perfect human relationship there can ever be is one in which we do not look to anyone for anything. You see, he wants you to look into the invisible. And we did that a minute ago. I felt the presence right over here flow right into my being. Wonderful. On the spiritual path, we must not be afraid to let anything or anyone go. And that's the big one, isn't it? I know the truth of that, but I can't say that I'm practicing that 100%, because I know I would still hurt to lose Madeline, but he says that it shouldn't be so devastating that you want to kill yourself. He doesn't use those words. I'm using those words. He said it shouldn't be so devastating that you lose your sanity or something like that. And I know it's not that, but it still probably wouldn't feel good. Okay. But I should be able to bounce back, because I know consciousness can form itself again and will, if I'm not standing in the way. I went to a spiritual meeting one time, and there was an elder lady there. I was only 18, and she was probably my age now, which is 67. I think she was 69 or 70. Anyway, she seemed ancient to my 18 years, and she was the wife of Al Capone, and she was a very spiritual lady. She said to me, "Hold out your hand," and I did. She said, "Now, let's see if I can get this right." And she said, "Now, make a fist," and I did. And she said, "How can you receive God's gift if you're hanging on so tight?" Oh, I've known some really neat people. Anyway, so she's right. She was right. We have to be willing to let go. And so if something did happen, I have to be willing to let go in order to let consciousness form itself as my companion and companionship. And I know that. In my heart of hearts, I know that. If we could empty ourselves every day of all we know, we would make way for what God has to reveal and what man has never so far even yet received. There's that word, receive. As many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, or as many as became still and received the impartation of the living God, they were able to look into the invisible. The three-dimensional consciousness thinks always in terms of that which has concrete form, yes. On the other hand, the fourth dimensional consciousness sees the form but looks through it into the invisible and finds concreteness in the invisible. The real substance is in the invisible. You see, this is so beautiful. Mwah. I love this. This is my life. This is my soul, my heart of hearts. Looking into the invisible for everything. You know, I used to think that nobody could love God like I do. And I was mistaken, because I was watching a teacher one time and I realized he loves God even more than I do. And so I had to come to grips with that too. Yes, there are lots of people that love God more than I do, that are more devoted than I am. That doesn't mean I don't love God, because I do. But I recognize the truth too. The fourth dimensional consciousness, Christ consciousness, or our consciousness, when it is illumined, does not have to labor or struggle. It has to be only a state of receptivity. This is a different world, a different way of living. We're not going out here to accomplish something and pull something back in and hang on to it. We're being still and allowing this withinness to flow. And it's effortless, and it's grace, and it's beauty, and it's yours. Joint heir with Christ to all the heavenly riches. This is them. It is always receiving by grace. It is always receiving nourishment because of the ever presence of that invisible meat, invisible bread, invisible wine, water, invisible substance, law, and activity. I have invisible meat. God is. There is nothing we can say, do, or think that is going to make God do anything. Yes, I realized that when I was up in an airplane and I got a window seat and I looked out there down there, and we were up above the clouds, they were passing, and way down there I could see the sun reflecting on automobiles' windshields, and I could see little squares. People like to build in squares. You know, God likes to just flow. Look at that forest behind me. But then you look at what man does. He does it in little squares. All right, so I looked out there and I couldn't see people. They were too far away, but I could see how big people are to the world. And as I looked out at the horizon, I could see how big people were to the universe. I could get a feeling of it. And how ridiculous to think that any of them can influence God. You know, I know, but when you're hurting, you say, oh, God, please. And you're trying to move the infinite. And you can't. There's a better way. And the way is to stop all that. In fact, just to stop. Father. And then listen, be receptive. That big, nice R word, receptivity. The more we relax in this assurance, the more we are in the fourth dimension, and the higher is the state of our illumination. Illumination frees us from fear, hate, or love of any form in the external world. And now that's the point where we have a hard time, because wait, what about my spouse, my partner? What about my friends? What about my parents, my kids, my grandparents? Am I not to love them? It doesn't say that. It says we lose our fear, our hate, and our love of the forms. You can look into the invisible and see the invisible, feel the invisible, and I get a nod of approval. We can feel the invisible of our spouse, our partner, our love. We can feel the invisible of them. That you can love. And that you'll never fear. That you'll never hate. Because when it reveals itself, it's like, oh my God, yes, that's wonderful. You see? Slowly I turn, step by step. We're looking into the invisible in all of our affairs. Okay, so only when we reach the stage where we realize God as our consciousness have we reached the stage of immortality. Immortality is the expansion of consciousness to the point of infinity. And I think I told you that spiritual experience that I had in the middle of the night where I knew it was about to go infinite. I felt the presence, it filled my body, it filled the room, it filled the house, and I knew it was going to fill the universe. So it's an expansion of consciousness. The human being is born, matures, deteriorates, and dies. All this is an existence separate and apart from God. All this as a personal self, selfhood, that has in it no element of spiritual law, spiritual life, or spiritual creation. All this as a purely animal life. So if you're not looking into the invisible, if you're living on the externals, if you fear, hate, or love them, if you try to demonstrate them, if you make affirmations and denials about them, you are, what did he say? Oh yes, you are not under the law of God. That guy or that gal is not under the law of God. I know it's kind of not something that we want to look at, but it's the truth. So who is under the law of God? Why does it say, I will take care of those who dwell in the secret place of the Most High, under the shadow of the Almighty? What does that mean? You know what it means. Those who look and live and rely on the invisible. Those are they who are under the law of God. All right, so what a difference there is between the natural man who lives like a vegetable and is fed by food alone and the individual that we are when some measure of illumination takes place and we no longer live by bread alone but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. We live by the Spirit. Remember, the name of this chapter is Living in, Through, and by the Spirit. If you're living by that invisible presence, you're living by the Spirit. What a difference between the individual we are that is being fed just by books. What a difference between him and those who are being taught of God. When inner light is coming to us directly from within, when we find ourselves experiencing grace that we had not earned or deserved, but yet which comes to us. At some point in our study or meditation, the light dawns. And whereas before we knew the truth intellectually, now we feel it. Now we see it, and now we live it. I live by the Spirit of God, not by external things, thoughts, or persons, but by the Spirit of God. This is the real meaning of the life of withinness, the mystical life that lives in and through the Spirit, rather than in and through the material world. It releases us from all attachment to the outer universe. We have no fears, no hopes, no ambitions. We are living in the Spirit, through the Spirit, and by the Spirit. And this is living the mystical life. So we have discovered our first chapter of Living in the Circle. Okay, and in the 20th book of John, Christ came and stood in their midst. That means that the disciples were receptive within and felt that Christ within, in their midst, and said, "Peace be unto you. As my Father has sent me, even so send I you." And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said, "Receive," there's that word, "receive ye the Holy Spirit." And they received. So that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be living on the within. And then in chapter 21, Simon Peter came walking up to the disciples and said, "I go a fishing." And they say unto him, "We also go with thee." They went forth and entered into a ship immediately. And that night they caught nothing. All right, so they entered into a ship. And that night they caught nothing. That night is those who are living by the third dimension. Those who go to get out here. And they caught nothing. Nothing. But when the morning was come, Jesus Christ stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Now there we have that again. John's telling us again that they are not recognizing the Christ in their midst. They think he's the gardener or just somebody fishing in this case. And he said unto them, "Children, have ye any meat?" And this is where you're supposed to know, "Yes, in my house I have meat." And they answered him, "No." It must have been, Christ must have been like, "Oh my God, I spent 3 years telling them how to do this and they still are not doing it." No, he had patience and he said unto them, "Cast the net on the right side of the ship and ye shall find." The right side of the ship is not out here. It's in here. The right side. The invisible. They cast, therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore, see, now they've seen the consciousness forming itself. Now they recognize who it is. That disciple whom Jesus loved, which is John, said unto Peter, "It's the Lord." Yes. Well, that's it for now. From that book, anyway. The whole point of this has to be, this talk this week has to be living by the invisible. He called it living in, through, and as the Spirit. It's the same thing. Looking into and living by the invisible. And it's a real experience. I don't know how long this talk has been going on. I do that every time with Zoom. There's a counter when I'm recording only the voice. And so I just look at it and I know how long it's been. I've got to remember in the beginning of these Zoom talks to look and say, "Oh, okay, that's the time I started." And then I won't run under or I won't run over. Okay, now let's take a minute and see if we've missed anything. Just be still with me. I'm going to read a few of my journal posts or writings because I want you to see that this is exactly what I've been working with. This is March of 21. "Ye must be born again. Ye must be formed again. Not by mind. He must be formed by consciousness, you see, by the invisible. We heard from Madeline, and I liked it so much I wrote it down. 7:21. When you align your will with God's will for you, you can see into the invisible. And then let's go a little further back. This is November of 2019. Every time you are presented with a person asking for help, you know that God never made a person. This is hypnosis, and it was not made. Therefore, stop. You listen. We're turning to the invisible. You are receptive to God. You may say, Father, reveal thyself. And when you feel omnipresence, then you have poured out health, spiritual health, the temple not made by hands, the temple made by God. We are to look through the person into the invisible. And in February of 2019, I wrote, impersonalizing does not mean removing the blame. Impersonalizing means removing the person and looking into the invisible. You see? We must discover a world untouched by mortal thought. That's the invisible. That was in 4:18 and must have been later in the day of 18, because here's an earlier one on 4:18:18, and I like it. If God is not in the human scene, then neither am I. I am in the invisible. Okay, so this is what we're working on. There are 157 of us now, I think, and we are working on looking through the visible into the invisible, whether we're working on building a house, painting our car, painting a house, grocery shopping, making the bed, or sitting down because someone asked for help. The answer is the same in all cases. We look into the invisible. And Joel tried to teach us to do this before we have a bite to eat. We look into the invisible. Thank you, Father. So we're grateful for the invisible. And before we go out the door and head out to work or our chores or our shopping, we recognize that God is just as much on the other side of this door as he is here. And we are stepping into God. In him we live and move and have our being. And so we're looking into the invisible. And I move this day throughout my consciousness. And everything and everyone that I see is entering that invisible consciousness. And I rest in it. Thank you, Father. Thank you. Thank you.